Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
There we go. Good morning, Hero. I forgot the mics. I got too busy.
It is Friday.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi.
It's Friday, December 11th. We're facing a weekend. Might actually rain here, Kelsey.
You know, it rained on us a little bit yesterday, which was insane.
It did.
I couldn't believe it.
It must have rained for an entire 5 minutes because I totally missed it.
Yes.
I was indoors. I was here, actually, at night. And somebody comes in and says, oh, it's raining outside. I'm like, really? Great. Let me run outside because I love rain. Nothing, man.
It's me just too.
You know, that's the kind of rain we get in L.A., so-called rain.
It's one of the things that I do miss about Texas,
yeah,
is the rain.
Did you guys get rain there?
Yes. Last time I was back home, it was thunderstormy, actually, which was so nice. I mean, just the sound of the rain on a tin roof and the thunder and the lightning. I love it.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Pull the screen down a little bit so I can see you. I can't see you.
Okay.
Not that. Just the screen.
Ah, just there the screen. You go.
There you go. Now I can see your eyes. There you go. So, yeah, so, I mean, that's one thing we don't get here is a lot of weather, you know. But everybody's counting on the El Nino effect, which is warm currents that come from South America. And they can bring down a lot of rain in Southern California.
Well, we need it. Let's pray for that.
I know.
For it.
And we really need it. But if it comes, it's going to be like a lot of flooding, too.
Right.
I remember that because we had it about... how many years ago? Like 10, 12 years ago? And no, more than that. I think 15 years ago we had that. And I enjoyed it because I love winter. You know, I love rain. But there was a lot of flooding and stuff because we're not set up to absorb so much water here.
There's so much concrete.
Yeah.
The concrete jungle, as they say, that, you know, it just can't absorb the rain.
Right.
So
I know. And we don't have such great irrigation and stuff like that for rain. People, you know, I mean, when it rains here, people suddenly they can't drive, you know.
Yeah.
And that's one thing about LA that people always complain about. People drive either too slow or too fast in the rain, you know.
I know.
Yeah.
I think driving is just an issue, period, in this town.
It really is. You know, we lose so many hours on the freeway. And that's why I'm so happy that I live close by, that I don't have to take freeways only when I go visit people.
That's such a blessing.
Yeah, but not to work. You know, I don't have to deal with that.
My jobs are everywhere, all over the city. So
you drive a lot.
I do. Yeah. I drive a lot. I don't have the luxury of being close all the time.
Yeah. Well, but you have a different kind of opportunities and stuff like that.
It's exciting.
It's nice, yeah, not to be doing the same thing every day.
Right. You know? I never live the same day twice.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is the goal.
Yeah.
So I like it.
Very cool. In a few minutes, folks, we're going to have a guest calling in. We're going to be talking about fascinating things like supernatural and stuff like that, Kelsey.
I'm excited about this interview.
Yeah. We're going to talk to the author of The Science of the Magical, From the Holy Grail to Love Potions to Superpowers. I'd love to hear about that, Kelsey. That sounds pretty interesting.
I know. It's kind of everyone's fantasy for those things to be real.
So I know.
We'll kind of see what he has to say about the science behind them.
Yeah. He had written a book before called The Science of Monsters.
Oh.
So that would be pretty interesting to get involved in things like that.
We don't want those to be real.
Well, we'll find out from him, you know.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't know. To my understanding, I think all these things were just made up. You know, I don't see proof to any of this stuff, but we'll see what he discovered, you know.
Hey, he's maybe a journalist. He knows something we don't.
Yeah, I know. So, and that's why we're going to have him on the show, of course, you know, so to tell us things we don't know.
Do you have any plans for this
spooky
weekend? Anything fun?
No, not really. Well, maybe. I'll tell you about it on Monday if it goes through. I have a couple of plans.
You're playing it by ear.
What?
Playing it by ear.
Yeah, pretty much. And I don't want to jump the gun, you know. I mean, if I'm supposed to be meeting someone that I talked to on the phone, and we'll see what happens, you know.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it until afterwards.
Right.
Yeah, you know.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, because then you could, you might have to eat your words later. You
right,
know?
Right. Oh, that's not good.
So that would be fun. There was a, I was invited to an event a couple nights ago. I couldn't go. It was called Babes in Toyland. Have you heard of that?
I haven't, but that really? Sounds interesting.
Yeah. So what they do is, I don't know why they call it Babes, because everybody's invited there.
Not just
and,
Babes.
Yeah, exactly. And usually when you go out, there's always Babes out wherever right? you go, you
yeah.
know. So it doesn't really matter. So it's kind of redundant to call it that. But that's what they called it. And I was invited by actually a couple people. And but I didn't go, because I went last year. It was at the W Hotel, and you know, I went, and I felt like, God, this is fun. You know, I went to I was invited by somebody, so, and I couldn't find anybody to go with, so I just went alone, and I met my friends there and everything. But you know what? It's just like all these events, it's like all younger people, you know, like 20s, 30s.
It is.
And if you start paying attention, you realize, man, do I even belong here? So, but people make you feel comfortable. I don't think people see that, you know.
I don't either.
People don't see like age differences and things like that.
No.
But I think it's just me. I'm self-conscious, you know.
I think that's the case
as I'm getting
as well.
Older, you know. I want to stay young,
guys. You're not getting older. You're getting wiser by the day.
Yeah, right.
There you go. And it's all mental. Hey, I turn 21 every year.
Yeah, huh? That's true. I know. Well, at your age, it's easy to say that, you know. But
right.
But once you reach your 50s, things change, you know.
They do. Things change. I've heard that yeah. they do.
They do, you know. I mean, the thing is that, it's not, things are not as easy, you know, because these are not really the times, like, you know, in your 20s, 30s, the times are to socialize all the time and be out with people.
Right.
You know, in your 50s, it's not like that. You kind of mellow out and, you know, so you're new to the dating scene. You don't know what's going on, you know, things like this.
Right.
And, yeah, so it's kind of weird, you know. But I do go to parties, and I have a lot of fun, you know. It's very cool. If I could have gone, I would have gone there. They had it at the Avalon, which is a pretty nice club in Hollywood.
I've heard of that. I've never yeah. been, but I've heard yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, actually. I've been there once. And so they said it was a pretty nice event, you know. I mean, I think it was cool. You had to bring toys,
oh sure,
you know, with you and stuff in order to get in. So sounded pretty good. But like I said, you know, so we'll see. There might be a party or two I'm going to go to, like Christmas parties.
Right.
But we'll see. You know, it's not.
There are so many great Christmas parties in LA. I know I went to one last year. There were actual reindeer at the party.
Are you serious?
It was perfect.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. And how they always get me is the food.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to decide between two parties to go to on the same night,
uh-huh.
I'll have to look at the menu.
Really?
Oh, of course. I mean, why else do you go, right? I guess if somebody cool is playing or something or performing, then that might influence my decision as well.
Right. But otherwise, it's the food.
Otherwise, it's the food.
Makes
yes.
sense to me.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes they have food. And that's the funny thing about LA. Sometimes people go all out for their parties, you know.
Oh, they do.
They'll do all kinds of things and stuff. Bring in snow from somewhere and bring in bands and, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of things people do here. There's a lot of money in this town.
There is.
A lot of people have a lot of money.
I know. I feel like there is, it's either feast or famine, though.
Yeah.
There's a big divide.
Well,
it's
it depends,
not,
yeah. It depends. On, yeah.
More so than other places in the world. I could be wrong, but that's just been my observation from living yeah. other places, that here there's a little bit less of a middle class than elsewhere in the world.
Yeah.
It seems like people are either really rich or struggling. I guess maybe it's the entertainment industry.
Yeah, it is the entertainment industry.
I don't know. Maybe that's just what I've seen from my friends.
Yeah. But. No, that's the thing. The entertainment industry has two extremes. You know, you can be big and make a lot of money, or you can just be a struggling actor.
Right.
You know?
It is feast or famine. Yeah. Big yeah. time in the industry.
Right. But that's in the industry. Obviously, there's other things in life here in LA, and I think in that aspect there's a middle class, but there's a lot of money. I mean, and you're reminded by it all the time. People drive like awesome cars you won't see anywhere. I mean, Teslas here are like as abundant as Toyotas, you know. So
speaking of that, we were shooting yesterday at a friend's house in Bel Air, and right next to him, they are building literally the largest house in the world. It's like it's half a billion dollars, $500 million, and it's 100,000 square feet.
Wow!
It's it's going to have like a 12 to 15 person staff full time.
Wow!
A bowling alley. A disco.
Where the hell do people get all this money, man?
I know. I think it's foreign money.
Yeah.
That's what I've been told. But yeah, it's insane. And I don't know. That would be pretty. How would you even fill that up? I'm sure they'll find a way.
Yeah.
But the furniture and the paintings and oh my goodness, it's going to be crazy. It literally looks like they're building a museum.
Yeah. That's a little excessive, I think.
It's way excessive.
But I guess when you have that kind of money, you know.
Right. I kind of must admit I want to see it when it's done, though.
Yeah. Huh?
Maybe
that
he'll
be interesting.
Maybe he'll invite the neighbors over, and we can drop in and take a look.
I mean, that's a big claim to make, you know, the biggest house in the world.
I know.
Wow.
I know. It's really bizarre.
And that's in Bel Air?
It is. Yeah.
Really?
It's in Bel Air.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah. No, I mean, like you reminded here, you drive in L.A. Around the hills, you see all these houses on the hills, and you know they cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder where people get all this money. And I guess some people, I've decided that people have different journeys here in life, and not everybody's in the position to make a lot of money. Maybe your lessons have nothing to do with money.
Right.
This time around, you know.
And maybe your goals have nothing to do with money. I mean, it's really funny because I was reading this article in a major publication. I don't quite remember which one it was, but they were saying that there's a threshold to happiness. And the threshold is $80,000, right?
Mm.
So past $80,000 income per year, money isn't affected by happiness, right? So you can make $2 million a year, you can make $85,000 a year, and
you'd be equally happy?
You'd be equally happy or unhappy. Money wouldn't influence it. Now, below $80,000 a year, money does influence happiness because it becomes an issue of comfort, right?
Yeah.
Like just basic necessities.
Right, and you have to worry about money.
Right, and being able to live comfortably.
Right.
But I found that really interesting that past that threshold, it doesn't affect people's emotional well-being.
It's probably because, you know, that's the opportunity to I'm distracted now because I think our guest is calling in.
Oh, great.
So let's go ahead and take that. Good morning. You're on the air. Is this Matt?
This is Matt.
Matt Kaplan, good morning. You're on the air. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. Great to talk to you.
Absolutely. Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm actually in Los Angeles right this very minute. Isn't that exciting?
Wow.
Oh, it is. Cool. You could have come into studio.
Yeah. Are you like on a book tour or something?
Yeah. I just finished it off, actually. And Los Angeles was the last stop. And, you know, it's such a pleasure to be here because the weather is so much nicer than it would be back in the UK.
Yeah,
we were just talking about that.
But actually, you hit an overcast day, which is very unusual here, you know. So
yeah, I was surprised yesterday. Everyone was looking at me as I was walking along the street and saying, "It never rains here like this." It's really unusual, and I thought, really, it feels just like home. So
there you go. Well, very cool, Matt. So so your book, you're doing the tour for The Science of the Magical.
Indeed.
From the Holy Grail to Love Potions to Superpowers. And we introduced this, teased it just a little bit before you called, so our listeners know what we're talking about. So, you know, I got to read a little bit of the book, and it's absolutely fascinating. And so tell us a little bit about the book first, and then we'll find out how you came to write it and all that stuff. So,
yeah, sure. So, I mean, the book really takes two angles. One angle looks at a lot of the stuff that we do today and asks the question, did we just make this stuff up, or did our fictions inspire us to go in this direction? So, you know, you can look at, you know, a lot of the work that's being done in pharmacology to try to make people fall in love, or to try to mess with people who are in love. Because, right. You know, forget making a love potion. If you've been married for 20 years and have 5 children, and you know, spontaneously fall in love with somebody else, you know, this would be a disaster if you follow that path. And many people don't want to follow that. Right. And so they really, it would be wonderful if they could break the enchantment, as it were. If there would be anything that they could actually do to try to not be head over heels for someone who's not their partner. Right. And pharmacologically, you know, chemically, we now have the ability to mess with that. And that's just the stuff only our ancestors could have dreamed of. So from that point, it takes a very modern view at where we're going with a lot of our myths. But then it also looks at a lot of the stuff that our ancestors got up to and says, and, you know, and asks the question, were our ancestors crazy? Or right. Were they onto something? And in many cases, you know, I test it out. Sometimes our ancestors really appear to have known quite a lot that we are just figuring out. And sometimes I look at it and think, my God, they really were nuts. What were they doing?
So why do you think that is? I mean, are we like more, are we distracted by other things in life now to get into this stuff?
Well, I think part of it is we look at a lot of the activities of our ancestors and think, well, we're so technologically advanced. We know so much. How can they know anything? But when you think about it a little bit more carefully, our ancestors had a lot of time. I mean, we're coming off hundreds of thousands of years of being human. And so let's go back to love potions for a minute. Humans haven't changed very much. Guys still very much want girls to notice them. Girls still very much want guys to notice them. And if you really care about that, you're going to meddle with things in the natural world and wonder, if I take this, or if I give this to the person who I want to have fall in love with me, might it make them do that? So there was a lot of experimentation, and some of the stuff that actually succeeded in functioning as aphrodisiacs got written down or told in stories. So, for example, we know Siberian ginseng functions as an aphrodisiac. I mean, we also know that, like, Ambra gracia, which is this disgusting gray muck found in the guts of sperm whales, and you ask, it also functions as an aphrodisiac, and you ask yourself, well, how on earth did they figure that one out? How did they possibly know? And I think the only answer you can have is, well, when you want people to fall in love with you for 50,000 years, you get to trying things. And so, I love exploring that. And while that all sounds very, very light and fun, you also get into this stuff. Like, the Egyptians were using face paint that for 100 years we thought, oh, that had lead in it. It was toxic. But in recent papers published in the Journal of Analytical Chemistry, researchers are pointing out, actually, the lead wouldn't have been toxic enough to really harm you, and it actually had an immune benefit.
Oh.
Similarly, you find these stories in the Odyssey of compounds being used that are now being used to treat people who suffer from Alzheimer's. So you've got these little nuggets of information that get stowed away in our ancient myths that are often disregarded as just fluff. And then you actually take a look at it more carefully and realize our ancestors were nowhere near as stupid as they're often considered. And they should really be taken as much more seriously.
Right. So, I mean, how do you actually get to experience these things? I mean, how do you know that they're actually true? Our ancestors indeed knew these things.
So in some cases I actually did test things out. For example, you've got these myths associated with the god Odin, who is featured in a lot of Marvel Comics films, but Odin was the father of Thor, and Odin had these two ravens and these two wolves, and the Norse mythology is so rich with tales of don't lose sight of the ravens. The ravens are good. You must never lose sight of the ravens. Similarly, it says the wolves, seeing wolves is a good omen. Follow the wolves to your destiny. Wolves are going to, I mean, one of the phrases says, Gir and Freak, which are the name of Odin's wolves, Gir and Freak will feed the warfaring followers of Odin. This is nuts. Yeah. Wolves and ravens steal food. They're not nice animals to have around. Why would this stuff be in their literature? And so I started, I really didn't know what to make of it, and I started talking to researchers who actually study ravens and wolves, and the folks in Yellowstone National Park who are studying the repopulation of the park with wolves, because wolves went extinct there in the 1920s, commented that they actually most often use ravens to track wolves in the wilderness.
Wow.
And I said, wait a minute, what do you mean? And they said, well, we have radio telemetry, and we have aircraft, but actually, if we really want to know when a wolf has made a kill, we use the ravens. The ravens make such a noisy ruckus, and they create so much chaos when the wolves kill something. You can see it a mile away.
Yeah.
And that was interesting to me, because I trained as a paleontologist, and in the world of archaeology, we know that tribes in Africa follow vultures to lion kills, and then they work as a team to use their spears to drive the lions off the kill, grab a piece of wildebeest, and run back to their camp. We have no tribes today that live in the north that do that, because they're all extinct. But it doesn't take a lot of imagination to say, wait a minute, were people following ravens to wolf kills and then stealing the meat? And if so, is that why we have it in the Norse literature saying, don't lose sight of the ravens and the wolves will provide for you? Right. So I actually ended up going out to chase after ravens to see if it is possible to follow ravens to wolf kills. Ended up sticking me in the snow in Yellowstone last year. Yeah. And it turns out, I mean, it was crazy. Our first raven took us to a dumpster, which was a little bit boring and unexpected. And our second raven took us on this long wild goose chase. And as I crested a hill, there were all these people staring through their $1,000 binoculars. And I said, what are you looking at? And they said, three wolves are just about to take down an elk. And we watched for 5 hours as the ravens created all of this chaos. And sure enough, they took it down. I stayed for the next week and kept watching ravens lead me to wolf kills. So I suspect that there was something real behind that mythology, and that it actually got, that this practice of following ravens to wolf kills was very much an act that our ancestors engaged in, and because they didn't have writing when it was first invented, they told it as a story and wove it into their mythology so people would know, follow ravens, wolves are good, steal their food because they provide for you.
Yeah.
And so I think that's how it all tied together.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, the book is called Science of the Magical. Do you have any scientific background?
Yeah, so I'm a paleontologist by training. Uh-huh. I studied fossils and tried to reconstruct ancient environments using the bones that you find in the ground. You look at it and say, okay, you know, you've got all these species here. What does this tell us about what the climate was once like? What does this tell us about what the ancient environment was once like? And so a lot of what I'm doing with regards to Science of the Magical is using the same kind of concept but looking at the mythology. And, you know, a lot of the book doesn't involve me trying to put it together. We've got a lot of research that's been done in a lot of areas, published in really great journals, that reveals a lot of the mythology actually likely has reality behind it. One of the best pieces is this piece that suggests that one of the drugs that is described in the Odyssey actually has an anti-hallucinatory effect. Uh-oh. And the descriptions that it has in the Odyssey are just spot on for this flower that's now used to treat Alzheimer's disease, which was presented at the 1983 World Congress of Neurology. So that was pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah. Now, I was wondering, did you get into like more heavy stuff like the Kabbalah and things like that, you know, where people, you know, I mean, many people are convinced that there's really, that if you can master this, then you have powers over certain things in the universe. Did you get into things like that too?
So one of the things that I really got excited about was this paper that was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2013, where these researchers demonstrated that if you focused your happiness in a certain way, so for example, if you were what they called eudaimonically happy on a regular basis, and eudaimonic happiness is kind of like a flavor of happiness, if you are giving to others, engaging in community activities that lead you to be connected to others in a social way and that you feel happy about that, that form of happiness was connected to an increased level of gene expression associated with the immune system. So if you regularly give to others or engage in this eudaimonic happiness, then your immune system begins to function rather differently than if you just engage in what's called hedonic happiness, which is frankly the kind of happiness you would get from winning $1,000 in Vegas.
Yeah.
And so we had no idea that, you know, you could describe these types of happiness. We've kind of known they existed for a long time, But who would have thought that you have such a different biological response to feeling them? Mm-hmm. And so that raised the question, you've got all of this material in the scriptures, going to Mark and Matthew, where it says, or Jesus Christ says, your faith has healed you. And as a scientist, I always was really skeptical of this kind of stuff. But when I interviewed the researchers at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, you know, and I asked them, hey, look, you know, if you were going on a pilgrimage and you were going with all your family to go sacrifice your goat to Zeus, and you were ill, would this increase the levels of eudaimonic happiness in your body such that it could help you fight off a disease? Right. And, you know, it was such an interesting conversation that I ended up putting into the book, because the lead researcher said, you know, this act of pinning your fate to something so much bigger than yourself, this act of being with family, praying with family, yeah, I think it really would. I don't think it would save you from a car accident or cure leprosy, as you see in the Bible, but there would be immune benefits, and it could really help you to fight off disease. Right. So that this is, you know, I'm going to be one of the first people to be skeptical of the concept that faith can heal you. But from that perspective, when you consider the research, it really starts to make sense. And incidentally, the coolest part about all of that is that study, because, you know, you get one good study in science, it could just be a fluke. That study just got replicated this June. And replication is the gold standard in science. It means, whoa, we really need to sit up and pay attention to this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
Yeah, very, very. We're talking to Matt Kaplan. The book is The Science of the Magical, From the Holy Grail to Love Potions to Superpowers. Have you... like witness any, well, the book you wrote previously is The Science of Monsters. Tell us a little bit about that one.
So Science of Monsters took a very similar principle. It asked the question, so Science of the Magical is really about things that awed our ancestors and asked the question, were they just, you know, were they being awed by something in the natural world that led them to come up with this magical event? Science of Monsters took the darker approach and asked the question, when people came up with monsters throughout history, were they just making them up, or was there something that truly scared them out there that led them to construct the monster? When you're walking through a forest at night and you see yellow eyes glowing at you from the reflection of your lamplight, what is it? And we're so good at imagining what that is.
Yeah, right?
It terrifies us. And when you can't see it, you construct even more terrible things to think about. And in that, what very well could have been just a passing deer turns into this beast that was stalking you, and you come back and tell other people about it because it scares the Jesus out of you.
Yeah.
And so I waltz through history looking at the different monsters that have been created throughout the years and ask the question, were our ancestors just making this up, or are there things that they could have encountered that led them to create these myths?
Yeah, very interesting. Well, I definitely want to check out that book as well. I mean, you're getting into stuff that people don't normally think about or get into, you know, as deeply as you do, and that's amazing. Now, how long did it take you to put together a book like this?
It took me 2 years, and frankly, a lot of that came down to actually incorporating activities into this. So, I mean, one of the things I ended up doing was looking at, you know, 2000 BC, a big deal was looking at livers and trying to predict the future using the liver of a sheep or a goat. And you look at that and think, this is mad. How could you possibly use a liver to predict whether or not someone's going to die of a disease or whether or not your future is going to be a good one? But
right.
I actually looked at the literature and asked the questions of classicists, and it turns out a lot of people were trying to determine whether the field they were going to build their farm on was a good field to build a farm, and whether there had been drought or disease in the area. And that led me to ask questions of veterinary pathologists, asking, well, you know, could you look at an animal's liver and determine whether there had been disease or drought in the area during recent decades? Yeah. And all of the pathologists said yes. So that seemed like a natural experiment to run. So I ended up going to butcher shops and examining livers that the butchers were providing, saying, okay, this liver came from an animal that lived in a horrible environment, and one of these livers on the table came from an animal that lived in a really great environment and was prancing around on the grass.
Oh my gosh.
Can you tell the difference? And it turns out you can. But a lot of those activities took a lot of time. And so those to get those activities woven into the book required, you know, the extra time to write the whole piece.
Right.
That's very cool. I want to know about the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
What do you know about that?
That's probably
okay, you know, when I say Holy Grail, some people think, okay, well, you know, the chalice, the cup, the blood of Jesus Christ. I sometimes think of Indiana Jones.
Me too. We were just talking about that. I said, "Oh God, I love that movie."
You know, and that's natural. That's natural. This is what our pop culture tells us we should think of. But actually, when you think about the Holy Grail from the concept of a cup that's going to increase your lifespan, from a cup that is going to make you move towards having immortality, this is actually a very recent kind of concept. It doesn't go back to Jesus Christ. Mm. It really arises in the 16 and 1700s, when people would go and they would go to the caves where saints once lived, and they would carve out cups from the stone of those caves, and they would use them as chalices to drink out of to protect themselves from being poisoned.
Mm.
And the concept that I hypothesized was, oh, okay, that's interesting. The main poison of the day was used by the Medici family in Italy. These were a noble group of families that would bump people off using arsenic trioxide. In fact, they used it so commonly throughout Europe that to be poisoned by arsenic trioxide, you were said to have been Italianated. they were master poison users. And wow. In fact, it was used so often to kill off kings so that their sons could take the throne that it came to be known as the powder of succession. And, you know, if you look at the modern literature on this poison, it's just so nasty. It's odorless, tasteless, dissolves instantly in liquid, and is known as among the more deadly poisons known to man, which is a quote from The Princess Bride. And, of course, they're referring to iocane powder. But that's actually the arsenic trioxide that they're referring to. So I had this idea, well, okay, wait, everyone is using these cups that are made from limestone, taken from the cups where the caves where saints lived. Is it possible that when you put arsenic trioxide in wine and you put it into these holy cups, that you have a chemical reaction? So I started working through the chemistry, and I calculated out, okay, right, you would get arsenic, and you would get calcium arsenate precipitating out of solution. The arsenic would bond to the calcium of the limestone in the cup, and you would get this poisonous layer along the bottom of the cup, but the wine itself would be rendered neutralized. And so I really wanted to test that because no chemist could actually tell me whether it would work. My wife's an environmental scientist, and she said, oh, yeah, we use limestone all the time to scrub arsenic out of drinking water. Mm-hmm. So that seemed to suggest it might be true. And as such, I ended up collaborating with a team at MIT, an environmental sciences lab, and they said, yeah, sure, come on into the laboratory, and we'll spike wine with arsenic trioxide, we'll try putting calcium carbonate in, we'll try using a Holy Grail if you can provide us with one, and I had a friend carve a Holy Grail out of limestone for me.
Wow.
And, you know, I ended up, the only way to get the arsenic trioxide, because it's such a deadly poison, I had to order it, and it was sent to the Children's Hospital in Boston, their toxicology unit. And I went to the front desk, and the lady said, oh, yeah, you're Matt Cabin, this is for you. And I said, do you want me to sign for this or something? She said, no. And I said, how am I supposed to get this back to MIT? And she said, public transport, I guess. And I said, how much arsenic trioxide is in this box? She said, I think a lot. So there I was on the Boston Metro with enough arsenic to kill absolutely everybody on the train.
Oh,
and no one seemed to care.
Yeah.
I don't know if I broke any laws or anything, but it was really decidedly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, we tested this in the Holy Grail, and it absolutely didn't work. If anything, the limestone grail that we carved drank up the wine and increased the toxicity of the poison in solution. It turned it into a poison chalice.
Wow.
So whereas, like, the mythology of Odin with ravens and wolves seems to be connected to something real, and whereas, you know, the makeup of the Egyptians seems to have had medicinal benefits, as far as the Holy Grail stuff goes, I came up empty-handed. I couldn't find anything that suggested that there was anything real behind it.
Wow. Very impressive. I mean, this sounds fascinating, and I highly recommend this. Like I said, I started reading this, and it's definitely a page-turner, especially for people who are into supernatural and things like this, which I know a lot of people are. So, you know, see some of the science behind all these things that you've been hearing about, and The book is The Science of the Magical, from the Holy Grail to Love Potions to Superpowers. Obviously, there's still a lot we haven't discussed. Matt Kaplan, can people get a hold of you if they want to? Do you have a website?
Yeah, they can go to matteroffactandfiction.com. And, it's odd. Some places are putting the book in the supernatural section, but really, because it's a science book, which looks at the science of mythology, you're more likely to find it in science or mythology sections in most bookstores.
Great. Are you signing today?
No, I'm all done signing. There's no more signing in the United States. I'm out of here. So it's been a pleasure, but no, there's no more signings for the next for the foreseeable future. I think I'm back in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Book Festival in April, and I'll be signing then. But I don't think I'll be back in California before that time.
So where do you reside now, in the UK?
In central London.
I see. Okay. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. Very fascinating stuff. Thank you for all this information you gave us. It's a lot to think about. And monsters as well, I mean, we might as well just, start accepting that at least our ancestors believed something was going on. And Matt set out there to prove or disprove some of these things. So,
well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. All the best to you, Matt. And thank you again.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Wow. I mean, it sounds interesting just to research something like this, huh?
Doesn't it?
Right?
That's so cool. I'm glad he didn't actually test the wine.
I know.
In the Holy Grail. Goodness. It's interesting because when he was talking about the ravens and the wolves, I mean, we can track dead animals by looking at the buzzard swarming.
Right.
So, I mean, right. That seems like kind of the same concept.
Yeah, it seems similar, But then again, I guess now we know that, but maybe at a time when people didn't know about the buzzards and the carcasses and stuff, maybe they were thinking differently. I don't know.
You sure?
I don't know. But, who knows, I mean... You either believe it or you don't, I guess.
I know, but it's interesting to research the science behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I love this stuff, It's really fascinating.
I do, too. And he was great. Good energy.
Yeah, very much so.
Very lively.
I know.
I could detect a British accent every now and then, but yeah. It was...
I know, it wasn't that heavy,
it
actually,
wasn't.
Right?
No.
In fact, he sounded a little Canadian sometimes.
Right?
Right?
I thought so, too.
Yeah. But great guy, Matt Kaplan, and the book is The Science of the Magical. So, moving on. So, today's Friday. Friday is my favorite day.
Me too.
Is it really?
Yes. How could you not love Friday?
I know. And because it's, I try to keep it like light as far as work goes. At night we usually get together with the family, which is nice. And then, of course, you get to sleep in on the weekend,
Oh, that's the best part.
I know. We were both complaining. We're extremely tired this morning.
I know.
And, but we're here. We're here.
We are. We made it.
We somehow managed to stay awake, folks.
Yes. TGIF.
Because we love what we do.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. It was worth it just to listen to Matt. He's something else. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to read the book. I have it right in front of me, actually.
Yeah. Sounds fascinating. I'm reading so many books right now. I don't know that I would have time for another one, but I'm definitely going to at least browse through it. And see, because it's like now I can't wait to see what he has to say.
Gosh, see, that's something that I need to get more into.
Yeah. You got to find the time, too. Sometimes I go a day or two without being able to sit down for 5 minutes. But when I do have time, I'm currently reading about 5 different books, so.
Gosh.
Obviously, it takes forever to finish them.
Yes, see, my mom is a reader. My little sister is a reader. My cousin is a reader. And I don't know. I didn't get that gene. My dad's not, so I guess I must have inherited it from him.
Yeah.
But I much prefer television, visual media. So,
there's nothing wrong with that. Television is very educational these days. They have just so much stuff out there.
Right, and I was fine in school. I can read it if I have to, but. Yeah. To read recreationally is a little out there for me. I get a bit bored. I want to go do something active.
Yeah.
But everyone's different.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. There you go. And that's why the human condition is unique and special, you know, because we're alike, yet we're different.
That's true.
You know. So are you ready for Star Wars? Are you going to see it at all? Are you into that stuff?
I'm not that into it. No, I have so many friends who are just diehards.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, they're there right when it opens. They're the first one in line, but I'm not too into it. I like more indie movies, actually.
Yeah.
Some mainstream. I of course, I love some mainstream films as well, but I really enjoy, I think we were talking about this a couple of days ago, actually.
Yeah, we were.
The independent film scene. I like that.
Yeah. No, that's cool, you know. I mean, but, you know, if you grew up with Star Wars, although many of the people that are standing in line now for 12 days, they're just sitting out there, you know, camping out and everything. The movie's due out next week on the 18th, but there's people lining up already, and that's what I was never able to figure out. It's like, what's the big deal about seeing it on the first night?
You know? Right, exactly.
Yeah, right. I mean, what's the big deal? So wait a couple of days.
Practice, you know, some patience so that we don't waste 12
exactly.
days in line.
But these people figure I've waited years for this, you know, decades, so I want to be able to see that. They get impatient.
Right.
And I would imagine it's also fun probably to camp out with other people and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
They're in line.
I mean, I guess you could make kind of a party out of it.
Yeah.
You know, if you go with a bunch of friends or whatever.
Yeah. Like Black Friday, you know, when people line up.
Oh, that's another thing I refuse to do.
Yeah.
Did you Black Friday shop this year?
No.
Oh, gosh. I refuse to fight the crowd.
Yeah.
It's crazy. There are all kinds of funny memes all over the internet about Black Friday in, like, America. And it's these Vikings running with swords, and it's like versus Canada, where it's like all these calm people. But yeah, it can get pretty crazy, I've heard.
Yeah. No, they do. They do. But I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing it, you know, because it's got the original actors in it too.
That's cool.
You know, they've aged a lot. We all aged together. I mean, you know, I saw the movie when I was 17, the first movie. And I sort of like grew up with that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was never really into science fiction that much, you know.
Yeah.
There's science fiction I like, but not necessarily space, spaceships and things like that, you know. But somehow they captured, it was something new that came out, you know. I mean, there had been Star Trek and stuff on TV, but but this one came and changed the rules, you know.
Yeah.
And
it's revolutionary for sure.
It really is, you know. So I guess everybody's not curious to see, well, what can they do now with the technology today? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when Avatar came out.
It was remember that?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was cool.
Really, really cool. So have you done any Christmas shopping yet? Have you got on it?
No, I'm
not.
Hanukkah
shopping?
Well, no, not really, because, well, we don't celebrate Christmas in the family because we're Jewish.
Right.
And so we don't buy presents, but there are many birthdays in the family and in December, so we buy gifts that way.
Sure.
And for Hanukkah, you don't buy gifts, maybe for the kids, but that's about
sure.
it. Yeah. So yeah, it's not the same, you know.
It's not quite the same.
No.
Yeah. We have this like
but
big
I love
soiree.
Christmas. Yeah, everybody loves Christmas, you know.
They
it's the nicest holiday, and the spirit in the air, and it's festive and everything. So.
I'm always so late on the draw.
Yeah.
Going and getting gifts. Yeah. It's like I always put it off to the last minute, inevitably.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Which I shouldn't do. I've been trying to make an effort to not procrastinate shopping, but hey.
Yeah. So did you say you're going back home for Christmas?
I am.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
So why don't you wait and get the gifts there? I mean, what, you're going to carry them all with you?
Right. Well, that's therein lies another problem, actually. I think with the bigger ones, I'm just going to have them shipped.
Yeah, that's true.
To Texas.
That's true.
And
that makes sense.
Yeah. And then the smaller ones, I will
just carry.
I'll just carry on. Yeah. But I don't fly back till the 22nd. So that would be a pretty tight squeeze.
Yeah, that would be.
And, you know, plus you get home and everybody wants to see you and you're having fun with the family. And it's kind of monopolizing of your time. So I wouldn't want to just be like, okay, guys, later. Going shopping for you all day.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll try to get it done before then.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to go back. It's always fun to visit home and get some fresh air, yeah. Some wide open spaces.
Nice, nice. That would be nice. So in the last few minutes, for those of you who have not listened this week, we have Kelsey here with us, and I think you'll all agree the first week went great.
Yeah, right? It's been so much fun.
So we're going to make a new intro, and your name is going to be integrated into the show.
Yay.
And you got to send me your bio and picture so we can add you to the website.
Of course.
And I guess you're officially on the show. You
woo-hoo!
Know?
Good news.
So how can people find you if they want to follow you and stuff?
Yes. If you want to see what I look like, not just what I sound like, you can follow me on Instagram.
Right.
And my username is @KelseyBohlen. Easy enough. So it's just @KelseyBohlen. And I believe I'm the only Kelsey Bohlen on Instagram. So
yeah. In fact, I looked you up yesterday and found it. And I'm trying to find what the pictures you posted, because what I noticed is you love hashtags.
Oh,
so you write
I
like
know.
Entire sentences in hashtags.
You know, it's so funny because my sister
it is funny.
Hates it.
Really?
My sister hates it. Yes. My little sister, she's like, oh, don't use so many hashtags. But you know what? You can use a maximum of 30.
Really?
On Instagram. Yes, that's
the
max. Oh,
I didn't realize they had a maximum, too.
Yeah, and if you go over, then the caption is just blank.
Yeah.
Like, it basically deletes everything.
Oh, really?
Wow. It does. But, you know, it kind of helps you connect with like-minded people, I think. Because a lot of times people search hashtags in order to find things they like.
That's true.
Or what have you. So.
Right. But, I mean, you know, so yours is going to come up and it has like a million hashtags. But this is cool. Can I read this?
Yeah, okay. Sure. Okay.
You took a picture here at the studio. So you wrote great day at work today, and that was the only sentence that was not in hashtags. So you got to hear some of the hashtags.
Oh, my gosh. Putting me on the spot.
Well, you know, I mean, you wrote it. You know.
I know. It's all there.
Yeah, but yeah, co-host, radio, love my job, brunette, eyes, green eyes. I mean, who searches for these things, you know?
You'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
Actress, smile, pearly whites. I mean, I love that. Pretty cute, you know, fit girl. I love that. You know, you're confident. You know what you have. And you're proud of it, you know?
Hey, these teeth are expensive.
And it's funny, you know? It's really... it's funny when people ride these things.
I know. Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people get a kick out of my hashtags. Yeah.
But what I did notice is that I asked you yesterday, I think, if you do modeling, and you're like, yeah, every now and then. And I'm looking on your thing, and I'm going, duh, does she do modeling? I mean, every picture is a modeling picture.
I know.
So you're being modest and stuff about it.
I do a little bit of it, yes.
Yeah. But that's good. So the camera loves you, obviously.
Oh, and, thank you.
And that's good. Yeah, I don't like when I take pictures, only sometimes.
Only sometimes.
Because, excuse me. Sometimes people are self-conscious and they see themselves differently from how other people see them.
That's very
right?
True.
Yeah.
Yes.
You see all the flaws in you when you look at pictures.
Yeah.
And then other people will think, oh, no, you look great, you know.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're our own worst critic.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I think everybody's like that.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know.
Just have to learn to love yourself. That
exactly. It's very important, you know. People don't understand that, but you know, if you have a hard time with yourself, you can't help anybody else either. You know,
so true.
You gotta be in. It's just like when you're on the airplane and they say, you know, put on your mask first before you help the kids.
Yeah,
because if you don't survive, the kids are not gonna survive. You know, so
right.
So this is, I think, very similar. If you're not happy, nobody's going to be happy around you, you know?
Yeah. It's contagious. That energy is contagious. So.
Yeah, it really is, you know? So we'll
see. Try to smile.
Yeah.
It makes everything better. It really does.
It really does. And so I'm looking forward to Monday where... to hear the latest stupid things that Trump has said.
Oh, my gosh. And, I know.
You know. I mean, he's totally alienated just about everybody.
He's something else.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about it Monday since we're out of time. But thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend. Kelsey, you too.
Yeah, you too.
Enjoy yourself. Relax. And maybe we'll get some rain here and we'll report on that. Like people really care.
Right.
A week from now when they listen to the archive. But that's the way it is, folks. We are live and we share our experiences as they happen. So, okay. So everybody have a great weekend. Bye, Kelsey.
Bye.
And we'll see everybody on Monday.
Bye, guys.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.